This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. After a week when in the Sky Bet Championship, it's deja vu, I'm afraid, for Nottingham Forest, who've lost their first four games of the season, just like they did at this point last year. In Sky Bet League One, Burton Albion's maximum points record was ended by Cambridge United. And, whisper it in case he's listening, two own goals from Thomas Hamer. And in Sky Bet League 2, Forest Green Rovers and Crawley Town served up a barnstorming nine-goal thriller at the New Lawn, with in-depth interviews and the stories behind the headlines from the world's original league competition. It's the official EFL podcast. It's been an unbeaten start to the season for Cardiff City, who early doors are nicely positioned in the Sky Bet Championship playoff places. And if I've got my maths right, I'm sure he'll tell me if I haven't, it's only three league defeats for the club since Mick McCarthy took over in mid-January. Although, before I ask you about that, I'm now bamboozled because in the preamble to us being able to speak to each other, you're currently manoeuvring the freezer and your oven, Mick. You're a picture of domesticity.
Oh, yeah. No, not the freezer. I've been in there. I went in there for my pie, but now I've been waiting for you guys. It might take less time to cook, you see, so I'm just a bit concerned about my cooking time.
Have you glazed it on top, or are you taking it as it sort of comes out of the packet and things?
Oh, as it comes, mate, as it comes. I'm not getting carried away with myself. I'll never starve, but... Anyway, let's talk about some football, which I'm...
Why not? And I mentioned your numbers, and when we were sort of liaising to set this up, I sort of mentioned your figures since you took over, and you knew instantly exactly what your numbers were, wins, draws, defeats. Has that always been part of your mix, that numbers are very important to you, that you know where you are?
I kind of like to know how many we've been unbeaten, Clem, or how many we've won. And tend to forget how many we've lost. Yeah. It kept getting said to me, because when we came in, we drew against Barnsley, and then we drew against Millwall, and then we went on seven wins, I think it was. And so the numbers kept getting thrown up. So I kind of knew, normally I'd have a good idea, but not when I get mid-season now, what's... win, draws, defeats ratio. I tend to know how many we've lost, that's for sure.
Yeah, and my question is really because I wondered how much of being a modern-day manager relies on sort of the prolification of information, and how much relies on the instinct that I guess has guided you long-term.
Far more now in terms of stats and the backup from everybody else, from fitness coaches, you know, and strength and conditioning and stats and... analysts, we use that far more than we've ever done. But I take my biggest percentage still on instinct, I would say. But we've got that backup, and I've got, of course, TC's brilliant with that other stuff as well, in terms of all the statistics that come in. And if there's any that really needs to be shown to my attention, then I get it shown. But I'm usually not far out just by watching the game.
Yeah. So how accurate is your radar as to where you are now after a few games compared to what you thought it would be? Do you normally have a good feel when you got your promotions at Wolves, at Sunderland, of how a season was going to turn out?
Sat in my apartment in Cardiff, Clem. I'm sat in my apartment at Cardiff. You knew what I was going to say anyway, didn't you?
Yeah.
I'm not getting carried away. We're unbeaten. And I'm not going to be disrespectful to any of our opponents, because the Championship is a hell of a tough league, every single game, and they've all been tough. But, you know, I've been watching, I've watched West Brom, and I've watched Bournemouth, and I've watched Fulham, some good sides. Birmingham have started really well. It's just a tough league. I'm not getting carried away with what we might do. I'd like to remain unbeaten. I'd like to win on Saturday and go into the international break unbeaten. So... other than that, Clem, not looking any further, mate.
I mean, is there a formula? Is there a Mick McCarthy formula? There are certain parts of it that have been with you throughout your now approaching 30 years as a manager, Mick.
I guess there is a formula. I've never sat down and worked it out.
Oh, wow.
I am, as you probably know, I haven't. I'm brutally honest with people, players, staff. Say it as it is. I guess I do it in a certain way. Purposeful. I use purposeful now because I got told off for saying pragmatic by Tony Pulis. Because pragmatic seems to, it's kind of a dirty word that you're just not playing football or not doing it the way people want it to be done. So he said purposeful is a better word. So, but anyway, I'm still being pragmatic by using the word purposeful.
Yeah.
I do thrive, I think, I guess as well, in trying to get the best out of people. And that's, look, over a long period, a lot of games now. And I've been very fortunate that I've had two really top coaches and top guys with me. That's Ian Evans first, and then TC, because I never thought I'd replace Taff. And yet when TC came in, I have to say, and I always say, I couldn't see the join, because he's just been fabulous for the last, is it 8, 9 years now, 10 years?
Yeah. Does that sort of honesty procedure, does that take yourself into account as well? Do you sometimes have a good stiff word with yourself? Do you review how you've done something? Do you look at ways to evolve the next time?
Of course, yeah. I don't think I would have survived that long if I didn't.
Yeah.
Because quite clearly, I haven't done everything right. I've made mistakes, and hopefully I've rectified them. That's if by the way we play and what we've done. Decisions I've made with players. Players I've bought, players I've sold, everything that goes with management, I would have a look at myself, yeah, by all means.
Mick, how do you review your own last 18 months? I mean, everybody's had one, haven't they, during the pandemic? But, I mean, there's been a few twists and turns along the way. I guess disappointments with the way Ireland came to an end.
Yeah, that was bitterly disappointing. But, you know, there was just contractual issue there. My contract ended at the end of July and Stephen Kenny started 1st of August. I think had we played the game against Slovakia and won and qualified, then I would have certainly stayed on and gone to the Euros. But I never got the chance to do the playoffs because it ended up in August. I think it did August or September. Yeah, went to, you know, been out of work since then. I got offered the job in Nicosia in Cyprus, and I wanted to get back into work, and I'm always up for a challenge. I mean, I went to Lyon when I was a player, and so I went abroad, and I thought I'd go and try it. We'd done okay, and then up until Christmas, we got 19 players with COVID-19. TC got it. I was training with, I think, four members of the first team staff and then the bomb squad and others. And we came back and we lost four on the bounce. Was it all down to COVID? Might not be, but we didn't have anywhere near the best team. And so I lost that job. I mean, that was 6 weeks, came home, and, you know, poor old Neil Harris was having a tough time and he loses his job and I get the call. So it's been eventful, yes, the last 18 months. But you know what? I've been very, very fortunate because I've been in work and I've been able to be out and about and doing what I do, whether it be coaching or managing on the sidelines. I've not been locked up and locked away. I think all of us who have been involved in football are very, very fortunate that we've been able to carry on.
You did shock me, though, because I did, when I came to see you for Football Focus shortly after you arrived at Cardiff, you did say to me that the highlight of your day for a few weeks was putting the wheelie bin out, and you did wonder whether opportunities like Cardiff might come along again. So, and you kind of shocked me at the time with all that history. It would have been absolutely appalling if that experience wasn't still being put to use somewhere.
Of course, but you never know. And I think if you ask any of us managers, coaches, whenever you've lost a job, you're always a bit concerned that you're not going to get another one. And it doesn't matter who it is who I speak to, it's always the case. And that's a worry. But, you know, the look, experience, and you get pigeonholed to being a certain type. I think people pigeonhole me and actually don't really know me, to be quite honest. But, and then I'm not sure I was the euphoric choice for this job. until we were 9 games in and we'd drawn 2 and won 7, and then all of a sudden, you know, people think differently.
Yeah. You clearly feel very much at home there as well, or so it seems from the outside anyway.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's great. It's great to have the fans back in as well. It's been brilliant. Last few games, we had a great crowd, 18,000 on Saturday. And so it was getting a really, you know, a fantastic win. Wasn't a fantastic performance all the game, but the upshot of this job is winning games and getting as many points as you possibly can. And so, you know, I think everybody went away happy. At least I did anyway. So if you can please one person, please yourself, Clem.
Yeah, no, it's a pretty good philosophy. I'm going to take that. That's going to be my number one takeaway from this chat. Mick, what did you inherit when he went into Cardiff, and how's the club currently looking as it evolves from the whole of the pandemic?
I probably said to you when we did the football focus bit, actually, that when every job you take, you have a look at the players and see what they've got. I mean, that was a bit difficult when I went to Nicosia because I hadn't got a clue where any of them were. But when I came here, I could see the squad that they had and the players who played against my team when I was at Ipswich. And I thought, yeah, we've got a really good squad. And of course, we've lost some of those players now. You know, Sol Bamba, Junior Hoylett, Joe Bennett, Harry Wilson, who was the star of the show I didn't play him in the first game, and I gave me reasons for that. And Shea Ojo was here, so we've lost a few. Harry starred for us in the end. So we just had a really good squad of players, and we've still got a good squad of players. I've said that. We signed 4 in the summer to supplement that, and I think we're in good shape. We'll be okay.
And I mean, stuff still going on. And do you, as an experienced manager, just have to accept that there'll be speculation about certain of your players, like there is, you know, with your centre forward at the moment, that's part and parcel of the game. And sometimes, if the price is right, they have to leave for the better long term fulfilment of the club.
I have a pal. This always sounds like I'm talking about myself. I have a pal who's an alcoholic. And he gave me the serenity prayer a long time ago. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And as I've got older, I just realised that that really sums everything up. There's nothing I can do about people being sniffing around Kiefer Moore. If somebody comes in and offers a huge amount of money, the club, I'm sure, will consider it. And he'd want to go if he can get to the Premier League, because I would if I was a player. So I don't sit at home and worry about it, Clem. We just get the recruitment guys out to get our lists out that we've looked at and players just in case. That's all. So,
Mick, do you need to check on the pie? Because I've just got to read 3 headlines from what went on elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship. I can do it as the oven door opens and we hear the fan whirring.
No, mate, no. Listen, the pie, I've put it in for 30 minutes. We're 10 minutes in, you're fine, pal.
Okay, absolutely perfect. Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, Fulham and West Brom continued to get into their stride with their 3rd consecutive wins. The former, with 18-year-old wonder boy Fabio Carvalho on the score sheet again. And there was another late winner for Coventry City this time at home to Reading, which took them into the top 6, just behind Stoke City, who inflicted Nottingham Forest's latest defeat. From a broader sense, you see what, say, Chris Hughton is going through at the moment. Is there sometimes just a point in a manager's time at a club where no matter what you try, you just can't seem to turn the tide?
Can be. I've just hear the results today. You're reading now. You know, I think Coventry were a good side last year. They seem to have started really well. Michael O'Neill, Stoke, you know, good results. And then I look at Chris, who they came to us last year, and they were one of the teams who beat us. And they were excellent, I thought, you know, kept the ball well. They soaked up a lot of our pressure, got a really good goal. I mean, we bashed them in the second half, but couldn't score. So, and I applaud that ability to keep the ball out of your net, you know, because if you can't score, then don't get beat. And I think he's got a lot of players with COVID, and he's got a lot of players missing.
Yeah.
And for the life of me, I can't see how, you know, Chris wouldn't get him going if he's got his full squad. Yeah. It's beyond me, that. Yeah. So I feel for him because I've been there and whatever you seem to do, just it don't happen.
Yeah, but as you said earlier in this chat, there is just a point, isn't there, where you know this is probably one where I don't care how we do it, we just got to take the 3 points and get people off your back?
Absolutely. Look, it's the first game of the season, that, and I... if you start and you get beat, it's horrendous. It really is. Because you've got the Carabao Cup coming then, and you've got probably a lower league side, and you can get a doing in that. And you know, we got a point in the first game against Barnsley, and I said I thought it was a fair result on the performances, but on chances created, we had the better ones and should have won the game. But nevertheless, people complain about a draw at home. Not a chance. First game of the season, get a point. Have something on the board and build on it. And don't get beat. So, it really is tough. And you can suddenly be 5-6 games in the Championship and getting beaten.
You're just sounding a bit pragmatic again there, Mick.
Yeah, Tony, really.
If Tony's listening, he'll be texting you.
He will, mate. And I hope he does. Keeps in touch. It's nice. It's but that's the way it is. You know, if you know me by now, Clem, I'm not going to open up, start, be all hairy fairy and think we'll do all this and we're going to be the best football team. It's not going to be the case, but we'll be one of the hardest teams to play against and one of the hardest teams to beat. And if you do beat us, you're going to have to work bloody hard and make sure you do.
Well, if we're having this conversation again at the end of the season, and at that point I'm assuming it'll be a slightly it could be a pie again as we're in the summer now. If we're having this conversation
might be
again
a custard
at the
pie
end,
for you, mate, you never know.
Well, I don't doubt it for a second. Where are you expecting the club to be? Have you got a feel for it? Do you know roughly where you think you're heading this season?
No, we've had a good start. And that's all it is. We've got Bristol City, who, you know, one of our nearest and not so dearest, and real rivalry between them on Saturday. And then we have an international break. And I'd like to have a win on Saturday and be looking at the league and thinking, well, we've had a good start. But where we end up, no idea. Injuries, suspensions, you know, all sorts of things that we're talking about. Chris Shuten, he's having all of those problems. It can hit any one of us and you can suddenly find yourself in trouble.
Mick, I do like to join things up on the official EFL podcast. Now, I've got Matt Gray, who's the manager of Sutton United, on because obviously they've got their first home game at Gander Green Lane. You had them earlier in the season, obviously, in the Carabao Cup. I guess as a dyed-in-the-wool football man, it's lovely to see the league getting refreshed. You'd have enjoyed coming up against them and seeing what they're all about.
It is lovely to see. I didn't particularly enjoy it, no, because that's the Carabao Cup game. You've got to win it. If we're playing Sutton, we've got to win. I think that's unacceptable if there's anything else, and I'm not dismissing them, because let me tell you, they were very, very good. And pushed us all the way. And they were pushing us in the last 3-4 minutes and just had a header went wide. It was a proper, proper game. And I felt they were great. But if they don't do well in that league, they'll stay up with the way they do it. They were terrific.
Beautifully set up. Mick, it's been an absolute pleasure. And we got through the whole chat without mentioning the Salmon Pink away kit. I considered mentioning that first, but I look at the boys playing in that and I think, really? Mick's manager of this team?
Clint, now I'm a grandfather. I have much more perspective on life and all-inclusive. Salmon Pink kits, colourful boots and about three of my players with headbands and stuff, so and ponytails. I'm cool now.
Well, let's hope your pie isn't gone. Pull it out of the oven. Lovely to talk to you. Thanks, mate.
See you, Clem. Ta-ra, mate. Lovely to speak to you. Bye-bye.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
And for those of you who are keeping culinary count, Mick's pie was served with sweet potato mash and some peas. In Sky Bet League One, with Burton Albion's defeat and Portsmouth only taking a point at Doncaster Rovers, there are no 100% records left in the division. Portsmouth and Sheffield Wednesday are the only teams in the whole of the EFL yet to concede a league goal. It's the first time Wednesday have kept clean sheets in their first four games since under Jack Charlton 40 years ago. It's not been a great start to the season for sometimes official EFL podcast pundit Nigel Adkins, whose Charlton Athletic side have only picked up a single point, or for Shrewsbury Town, the only team in the division yet to pick up even that. In Sky Bet League 2 this coming weekend, a giant-sized footprint will be left on the football landscape in Surrey when the London Borough of Sutton hosts its first EFL game. Since winning the National League last season, all three of Sutton United's games so far have been away from home, while their ground and pitch were brought in line with EFL regulations. Plenty for the Sutton United manager, Matt Gray, to think about. They're working through the nightmare, aren't they, to get Gander Green Lane ready for the first match against Oldham Athletic?
Yeah, they certainly are. We haven't been allowed back in the stadium for probably the last two or three weeks. We're normally based there before and after training, but we've kept away from the ground, and I know all the board and all the volunteers have been working extremely hard all around the clock to get, you know, as ready as best we possibly can for what's going to be an exciting day against Oldham in our first ever league game in the Football League.
Yeah. How have you had to adapt your own preparations? Because you have lost what was your training facility as well. There's been quite a bit of reorganisation to do, I think, hasn't there? As well as obviously, you know, getting used to the fact that you're playing in a league higher and up against former Premier League clubs.
Yeah, the things I've had to concentrate on changing has been the pitch and where we used to train on the pitch at the stadium, and finding a new training ground. We've linked in with Sutton Grammar School and using their playing fields, which has been an excellent facility, and we've really been really pleased with that. We were sort of three-quarter time or a hybrid model last year with our training. So we've gone to the full time and 4 days a week training, as well as we travelled everywhere last year on the day. So now, you know, we are having pre-match meals and going the night before on the longer journeys. So we're just bringing everything up to speed and starting to act like a League Two football club as well.
Mate, I don't think I realised that. So you were kind of in that hybrid training format. You weren't fully full-time, if that makes sense, last season, which, again, kind of compounds just what you achieved last year.
Yeah, it certainly does. All the players, it was mainly their full-time job. We were training in the mornings, but we weren't full-time. We were doing three out of the five midweeks. But with the amount of games, obviously due to the season with COVID, etc., that a lot of the Tuesday nights we had to play, we were really coming in on a Monday, back in on a Friday, ready for the Saturday game.
Oh, Matt, I mean, obviously, you know, 3G pitch. I mean, is it a lot different to grass, the sort of version that you were playing on? And I'm asking the question because I'm wondering how much you've had to actually change your approach to playing the game. Is the bounce going to be very different for you? Is it a very different scenario you're dealing with?
There's very mixed opinions on the surface, to be honest. I think there's a bit of a myth around the injury side of things. I certainly believe that when I came into the club, I thought, oh, you know, how often can we train on here and players, etc. But the types of injuries and the small amount of injuries that we've had by playing on it and training on it certainly proved to me that there's no issue on that side of things. In terms of the way we play, yes, it's not completely like grass, of course it isn't, but it certainly doesn't affect our style or how we play or the variety in how we try and play our game. Our away record last season was just as good as it was at home, and I'm sure this won't be a problem for us leading into the season.
I was so impressed that you've managed to hold together the sort of nucleus, sort of starting 11 and subs that fired you to this success, because the pace of change in football, Matt, is just colossal, isn't it? The sort of churn of players, but clearly this was very important to you to maintain that certain identity that's brought you this far.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there was probably a concern if we hadn't maybe got promoted that we might have lost a few. And it probably still was there, even though we did win the league. But the first and foremost, my job once we won the division was to make sure I could keep all that nucleus of players that did so well for me last year. And I managed to do that. I wanted to keep all 18 I wanted to keep, and I managed to do all 18. And I've just looked to build there. I've signed five, which have added into the squad really well and give me good competition. And I think the biggest difference between the National League and League Two would be the transfer window. And I just need to make sure that once that window closes, that we've, one, got good competition. But if we were hit with several injuries, that I've got enough quality to make sure we can get through a difficult period.
Do you have any concerns? Because it's there are very strong community ties. I mean, you know, you encourage the players to go and have a drink with the fans after the matches, etc. Do you have any concerns of trying to keep those values together but moving on to a bigger stage?
No, not really. It's such a great community feel about the club. And that starts off with the chairman, Bruce Elliott, and the way the club do things. It's just such a shame that the pitch was used for every aspect of the community and it's not there anymore. I think the club are looking at different sites within the borough to try and, over time, put another facility down that we can all be based there again and use that for everybody connected with the club. But we're currently using several different sites and we're getting out amongst the schools, and I know the walking football's still going and the ladies section and the disability football, and it's just not all under one roof at the moment. But I think over time we'll look to get that back to what it was.
Matt, this is proper, isn't it? This is proper how football used to be 20, 30 years ago at all levels. Well, you probably don't know because you're far too young, but you'll have a fair idea. Your granddad probably told you it used to be all right back in the day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's what I like. I'm a young, up-and-coming manager, but certainly got some old school and strong morals of how football should be and not getting too above our station, you know, who we are, prima donnas or anything like that. We're all in it together, the supporters, we've got volunteers, the board, are all volunteers as well. Everyone pulls in the right direction to try and do the best for St United. And myself as manager, the staff and the players are certainly not going to pull away from that.
Do you want to give us a little flavour of the squad background? What kind of previous experiences they've had? What kind of mix you've got in there?
Yeah, I've got a real mix, to be honest. Dean Bazanis, my goalkeeper, was at Liverpool as a youngster, 17 to 20, 21. Had a couple of loan moves in the Football League before going back to Australia to have a career out in the A-League. It was only by chance, really, that his partner moved back to sign for Arsenal. So that's why he came back to England and was looking for a club. So I managed to capitalise on that and sign him at the start of last season. And he's been brilliant for me and really, real good experience. I've had players who have played in the league before, the likes of Rob Milson and Craig Eastman, who has played for Arsenal in the Champions League. Harry Buterman, my vice-captain as well, has had several Football League clubs. But I've got a good mix with some younger players in there as well. We might have been at Premier League or Championship academies and might have dropped either straight down into me or maybe dropped into non-league before moving it back up to me. So I've got a good blend of young, hungry players as well as the experience in there.
And what about yourself?
Yeah, I had to retire young, unfortunately, through having six operations in 6 years, and I couldn't quite get fit and make myself as a name as a player.
You were on the books of Spurs,
yeah, and Cardiff as a professional as well. But many operations, as I said, and three knee operations, three back operations, and retired quite young, which is very sad at the time, but has allowed me to only be 39 now, but I've had 12 years experience as being an assistant manager or a coach, and then 2 years now as a manager. So it feels like I've been in that dugout for a hell of a long time. And I was certainly ready to make the step into being a manager after a couple of spells in the league as a number two or a coach with all the shot and Crawley. And I'm really relishing and I'm enjoying being number one.
What did you expect to happen last season, Matt? What was a realistic target in your head?
Personally, we'd finished 15th the season before in my first season. It got cut short due to COVID. The second half of that season, we were on a really good run. We were sort of going under the radar, really, and climbing up the table very quickly. And I believe we would have probably finished 10th or 12th if we'd have seen the last eight games through. So that is why I was very keen then to keep the nucleus of those players who did well for me in the back end of that season, which again I managed to do. A really good, hard-working, good group of players. That I thought if we could get off to a good start, I realistically thought that challenging for the playoffs would be a serious consideration. I stressed to the players at the start of the season that I felt, first and foremost, I don't really like overly goal setting and looking too far ahead. But as my chairman says, he just wants us to stay in the National League and make sure we stay there. So the first goal was certainly 50 points, but I knew we could try and get that on the board as quick as we can and then just see where it took us. But I think when we got that tally, I think we were second in the league. So I set the players the target of guaranteeing a playoff place. And again, once we sort of, you know, set that one and got that over the line, we were very much in a title race and we managed just to keep churning those results out and see it over, which I'll be honest, nobody inside or outside of the club would have expected to do what we did last season.
I mean, it's a hell of an achievement. I think probably in older football circles, you say the name Sutton United, people will think back to 88, 89, beating Coventry 18 months after they'd actually won the FA Cup. Or obviously 2016, 17, the sort of run to the was the fifth round, wasn't it? Yeah, of the FA Cup and playing Arsenal. But that achievement as a standalone is, well, it's right up there with that giant-killing success, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, definitely a big old traditional non-league club with good cup pedigree, and as you've just mentioned there, the two good cup runs that they've had in recent years. It is certainly probably what Sutton's known for, is probably as well as their kit colours and the ground, etc. But to suddenly find myself as manager in the top tier with them. Has to go credit to Paul Doswell, the previous manager, and the 11 years he put in extremely hard work to get Sutton where they were. And he was manager of that cup run that finished with Arsenal there. So to take over from him, who did so well and put the club to where they were, and then just to take it on and manage to get the league form going and turn it into a football league club for the first time in its history is a great honour, and I'm extremely proud of it.
Matt, be honest with me. Have you had any sort of pinch yourself moments since you've come into the league? I mean, you'll have to listen back to earlier on this week's edition of the Official EFL podcast, but we had Mick McCarthy, who obviously you faced in the Carabao Cup, paying tribute to you. You'll have to listen back to it to hear what he had to say. But have you had any of those moments where you've looked across and thought, wow, look at where I've come from. Look at what I've achieved. Or is a football manager's natural propensity to keep trying to get onto the next step and to keep thinking in a forwards direction?
No, you're definitely always trying to think in the forwards direction. You're constantly trying to improve. We're trying to improve both on and off the pitch, myself and my assistant, Jason Goodliff. And I've been fortunate enough, the club have allowed me to bring a close friend of mine, Terry Bullivant, in as director of football. So someone of his experience and knowledge as well to help me and Jason has been invaluable in the months or couple of months that he's been with us. So I think with the busy summer that it's been and how much work I've had to do, I probably haven't had time to pinch myself until probably I saw the emotion of the directors on the morning of the game for the first ever game in the Football League against Forest Green. I'm sure Saturday will be very similar. But I think for me and my assistant, when we walked in the players' entrance at Cardiff and walked down the tunnel there and saw the fantastic stadium, and just for me personally to be new into management and to be standing in the opposite dugout to someone I hugely respect and admire for the career that he's had in Mick McCarthy, an international manager, managed at World Cups and however many Premier League games he's taken charge of as well, was very special as well, and certainly realised the hard work that we've done over the 2 years has certainly come to reality of where we are and the shoulders that we're rubbing with come this season, hopefully for many seasons moving forward.
You set that up beautifully with something you said 45 seconds ago, Matt, because elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, Nicky Carden was Forest Green's hat-trick hero in their 6-goal demolition of Crawley Town. Exeter City scored their first goal of the season and another 3 in their win over Bristol Rovers. Kevin Bond, by the way, is Rovers' new assistant manager, and Newport County's win at Tranmere Rovers was missed by manager Mike Flynn, who tested positive for COVID, wishing him a speedy return. What would be a realistic aim for this season, Matt?
I'd probably say the same thing to the players. Well, I have said the same thing to the players that I said to them at the start of last season. Realistically, we wanted to stay in the National League, and we're no different this year in our first ever season in the Football League. 50 points would be a great first target for us. But then on the back of that, you just never know. And you certainly never know with this group of the players and the togetherness we've got and the quality and how organised we are. And I believe we can pick up results at this level as well. So you actually never know. And certainly after my experience last year, anything's possible.
What a wonderful way to finish. Great to talk to you. Enjoy your home bow, Matt.
I will do. Can't wait. Thanks very much.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Matt Gray and to the one and only Mick McCarthy. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.